And then I went on something called the Nomad Cruise, where I gave a talk to like 500 nomads.
Yeah.
And I was talking about my personal journey of what I've been trying to accomplish for my own life the last few years. And one of them, I said, actually, I'm just starting now. The idea, the concept of nomads giving back. And it was pretty interesting because I found that sometimes you need to just put an idea out there and then see what happens and be willing to sort of like jump out of the helicopter and you make the parachute along the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the More Than Backpacking podcast. My name is Damon O'Neill, and today's guest is Tarek Kalusi. This guy is a guy I met in Medellin, Colombia, throughout our time there, and he is an absolute legend. I'm currently in Guayaquil Airport in Ecuador, and I've just listened to the conversation, and again, it has amazed me. Throughout the conversation, I kept learning more and more about him, what he's done, how much he has grown over the years, and just what he's doing and how much he has to give and offer, which is brilliant. And I'm buzzing for him. I'm super happy for him that he's on this amazing journey. And I've got so much inspiration from the guy. The geezer has run a marathon at Base Camp Everest 2 months after signing up for it. And 3 weeks to hike up to the base camp, and he just kept saying things that I get inspiration from, and I realized that we had so much more in common than what we first thought, not just because we are both part of the elite group who have run a marathon, which I didn't talk too much about considering he's run a total of 25 marathons compared to my one. So honestly, this episode is amazing. We talk about his growth, how he lived in New York and was a corporate slave, but how he looks at it positively, and it's put him on this path now where he's creating a social enterprise called Nomads Giving Back. Look in the show notes for the links for that, because we went to some events and they're doing events all around the world. If you want to learn more about giving back, volunteering, whether it's long-term, short-term, or maybe you'll be able to help him with the link as well, which would be amazing. And make sure you listen out. Part one, we talk about Nomads Giving Back and how he found this passion to give back and why he's in that community of nomads and how it really started and what his plans are for it. He has amazing plans, and I was happy to be a part of that in Medellin. Hopefully be a part of that more. And don't forget to watch out for part two next week, where we talk about his base camp marathon. We also talk about doing the first ultra marathon on the island of Bali and raising $100,000 for charity for kids' education. And also throughout the podcast, you'll hear how we talk about the process, how you have to love the process, and it's all the same game. So I hope you learn from that and you understand it, because that's what I've felt like I've learned through my experiences, and it seems like Tarek has as well. And I feel like a lot of people can apply that. So whatever you're doing today, have a fantastic day. Hope you're loving the game, hope you're loving the process, and I hope you're loving the podcast. Peace.
Oh, by the way, they're going to let us know tomorrow about...
It's too loud.
That's all right. We just want to get like 3 beers, some drinks, like an area. So you just need to let us know how many drinks and food, and then they're going to give us like a free meal for the winner that they can get within a month. So hopefully my team doesn't win, because our team is with the coaches in the community, so they're probably not going to go to Selena for a meal, but we'll work it out. But how about you? Have you got a team? Any word from your
team? Well, I talked to my team. We want to do it.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to hosting a team. So I'm pretty confident we'll get a good team. If we're lucky, maybe even two.
Yeah. Yeah. Let us know. We got, since we've spoken, one team's definitely confirmed as well. So, but we'll definitely save you one
One spot?
Yeah. But if you get two, then like just let us know straight
away.
Okay,
so my goal is to spread the word after our talk now.
Yeah.
And take it from there.
Yeah, no, that's cool. The Manu.
Manu,
The lady I spoke to was Manuela. I assume her name's like Manuela or something. Uh-huh. Her name was Manuela as well. And she said, oh, I saw her at the desk. And I was like,
no
that's
way.
Because you just told me that she used to work for Selena as well.
Yeah.
But,
Manuela was my first hire.
Yeah.
And she's amazing. And she spent more than a year with Selena and is really tight. She's very proud to be part of that team.
Yeah.
So I feel like the people at Selena are really, really friendly.
Yeah.
They've been hosting some really good events. I don't know, have you been to any of them?
No. Like what? Like their give back events or their general events in the bars?
General, yeah. But like either Nomad related. I think they have occasional give back. They have actually their own program. When my friend started a program called Selena Gives Back.
See, this is the thing. They don't promote it.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to like hint it into her today. I was like, yeah, I know about that. Like, I've spoken to people because they asked us to like jump on a call with all their community managers and stuff just because they saw what we were doing. But like, I feel like it's a bit passive, and I don't know if it's ticking boxes or not. But
so here's my understanding. So one of my good friends, Virginia, was head of their Selena's HR for a couple years, yeah, up until about a year ago. And at the time, she created something called Selena Gives Back.
Yeah.
And then I had a call with their current leader, who's based in the U.S. And she seems really great.
What's her name?
I have to double check. It's been a few months since I talked to her. We had a really good call. The thing is, I think they're thinking much more global than local. And I think that's one of the challenges with big organizations, is, you know, how do you deploy your philosophy on the ground?
Yeah, yeah.
And also giving back, I mean, you know how it is, like social impact is a little bit tricky to prioritize because it doesn't have an ROI often, right? So
it can
it's
just
like,
be a tick in a box. And
it's just hard to find the right, because every business, even nonprofits, are super busy juggling priorities.
Yeah,
I know
I
am.
Yeah.
And but I really think that Selena has the right vision for bringing people together, and they're really indirectly and hopefully directly will sort of like piece it together.
Because they do, she was telling me today, their staff members dedicate 4 hours a month to like the local projects, and the meaning behind it is to be part of the community.
Yes.
Because I think they got some criticism somewhere down the line where they spent a lot of money, but like they tore apart something. I'm not too sure. Like
exactly.
Like, and they didn't give to the community. Like it's just all take basically. But I think that's why it sort of stems from that, and they're trying to be part of the community.
Yes.
But there's backpackers who want to do that, but they just don't know how to. This is like part of what we say. We try and like tell people that like if you ask them questions, you can find opportunities to give back. And Selena, everyone knows Selena.
Yeah.
Really, even if you like them or not, or want to stay there or not, and if you're staying somewhere for long enough where you can do even just a day or two, like they do stuff. And
exactly,
like,
and I mean, and that's the vision. I mean, I just remembered the woman who leads Selena Gives Back now for Selena.
Yeah.
Her name's Eva Rowe.
Right.
And she was sharing with me a couple months ago that they're looking to actually get the local leaders involved, and make it part of the process. I think it's a complicated thing to do.
Mm.
She was giving me a great example about what they're doing in Costa Rica, for example. I know, like, with what I'm trying to achieve as well is try to solve that same problem. Is when someone like you or me drop into a new place, how do we connect with the local social causes?
Yeah.
And it's easier said than done, but I really think there's so much potential because I hear more and more. I mean, just today, someone posted in one of those Facebook groups, hey, I want to give back, but I don't know how. And someone tagged me because they happen to know. I think we're at this point where with access to information, if we can sort of, like what you're doing, raise awareness and serve as that bridge, I think that's the secret.
What? So like, so on the subject, so like you've got Nomad to give back. So have you started, is it official? Have you just started it like a Facebook page, or have you registered as a non-profit or an organization, whatever?
Yeah, we just literally started the concept in the last couple months. So we haven't officialized anything yet because
I am in the process of figuring out what's the best legal model.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of social entrepreneurship, social enterprise, where there's a revenue generating model.
Yeah.
I've worked for nonprofits. I volunteered for nonprofits. I've consulted and volunteered for social enterprises. And I think every model has a role to play.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to balance what I think is ideal for what will have the optimal impact.
Yeah.
And as of now, I'm thinking about having a blend, having two pieces of it. One where it's nonprofit or fundraising type causes, and one where it's more sustainable in the long term.
Well, it crosses over anyway, because a charity has to have a sustainability line. Otherwise, it's just relied. I mean, even if that is donors, then otherwise they go bust. And then likewise, a social enterprise is there to make money, but then it needs the charitable causes to be linked with it. So it's literally like the legal documents that make the difference, really.
You're exactly right, because nonprofit is still revenue generating, but they rely on donations.
Yeah.
And that's a whole business behind that.
Yeah.
Fundraising. I mean, I worked for a top nonprofit hospital in New York, where they relied heavily on big donations, and that was a business by itself.
I'd imagine hospitals are ones that like rely on donations more so than like more local. Like hospitals are big. You see where the money's going. Like,
yeah, I think
maybe it might be different in the US, where it's all private. I'm not sure.
Exactly. I was about to raise that point that healthcare in the US is pretty different than healthcare in other countries.
Yeah.
So in the US, it's both. It's a blend. There are for-profit, there are non-profit, but even the non-profit operate very culturally for-profit. It's just that the donations is sort of like their business.
Yeah, they need it.
I mean, I'll give you another example. On a very local level, I was visiting Ethiopia, and I was catching up with a friend of mine, and she brought one of her friends who happened to lead a non-profit orphanage. And clearly an orphanage is more of a non-profit model.
There's no
money about that, obviously, from a social enterprise perspective. That said, I asked her, how was her day? She said, actually, it was really not good. I asked, why? And she shared that she just found out from her donors, a few Dutch people that sponsored this orphanage, said that our priorities changed and we're no longer going to fund you. And it was like 90% of her funding.
Wow.
And she had just taken in a few new children and babies that week, and was thinking, what do I do about this? And that's when I was thinking, well, that's why you need social enterprise, you know. But it's not that simple. How do you make an orphanage into a social enterprise?
Yeah.
And so, you know, these are tough problems to solve for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of us have good ideas and good hearts, but it takes, I think, a lot of creativity and a lot of resilience, and like you, a lot of commitment. I've really been admiring what you've been doing with the Three Amigos, and I think it needs to be a blend of both, ideally.
Yeah, that's what Kata. When I was speaking to Kata, she was saying that Colombians don't know that they're starting non-profits, and they don't know that they're going to go bust, and they need some sort of revenue. Whether it's from donors or like something that they're gonna earn a revenue from. And she was like, I feel like I'm teaching them, and I'm still learning about her. And even that is it's almost like more backward here, maybe, where it's all less developed, not backward. Yeah. But
I'm really super impressed with Kata's story, how she went out to Cambodia a couple of years ago and really fell in love with the idea of volunteering and bringing that back to her home country. It was really cool to support her event a couple of weeks ago, where you and I were both at. And, you know, I talked to a few of the people that I invited to join that afterwards, and they said, you know, this was so cool. This was so interesting.
Yeah.
It was cultural. I felt like I was giving back. I wish there were more of these types of things.
Yeah.
And I think that's the vision, a big part of the vision for what I'm trying to achieve, Nomads Giving Back, is just to create more awareness and opportunities, like what you're doing next week.
Yeah.
With the fundraising for the football, for the kids in the Comuna.
Yeah.
I have a strong feeling that these are the things that people want to do, but it takes a lot of effort on your part, for example, to make those things happen.
I want to
try to find the piece, the missing link, between connecting foreigners, like nomads, expats, yeah, travelers, so that they become more aware of those things rather than just doing the typical touristy stuff.
Yeah. So that is like what Nomad's Giving Back, because we were at a couple of events and I heard, not your pitch, but obviously you have to explain in the first events, and you're saying just connecting travellers to, and more aware is actually a good thing. But say like people are here for a few days, do you want to target them, or do you purposely try and target them, or is it for like longer periods, would you say?
It's a good question. I think anyone who has an appetite for this are welcome. And by the way, that includes locals.
Yeah.
I mean, I've talked to locals, including my own team members. I have a few team members who are Colombian that want to actually volunteer and give back to their local community.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is everyone's invited. And, you know, I thought long and hard about what to call what I want to create. And I went with the word nomads only because I've become quite plugged into that community.
Yeah.
And it's a unique niche in terms of there's a lot of things targeting 1 week, 2 week voluntourism. There's a lot of things, you know, expats tend to figure things out that are there for a while. But for people who are coming for that 1 to 6 months, sometimes a year, it's a little bit trickier.
Yeah.
So, and I happen to know a lot of them. So I thought, maybe why don't I create something that's targeting that as a core.
Yeah.
But really, it's for anyone.
Yeah. So, like, see, if we go on them, that niche, like, what do you think they want to do? Like, so, like, that, the yeah. first event that we went for, like, so, I think we might have done, or may not have done, more volunteering than a lot of people there. We spoke to a lot of people. Some were like you could tell they were just sort of coming to check it out, which is sort of fair for the first event as well. But like, I'd like to see like what they want to do. Like, I don't know, how committed are they? Do they just want to like help, say like the masterpiece or someone who was there just for some advice, and then like, oh, I've done my bit, which I don't know like how valuable that is.
Yeah. I would. It's a really good question, and I'll be the first one to admit that this is a work in progress.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that. Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's the whole point, is that you often don't know what will happen when you bring people together from different diverse backgrounds, with different diverse backgrounds, and a good intention.
Yeah.
Sometimes connecting those, what is that?
Some alarm, I think. That's right.
All right. So I was saying, you really don't know what could happen when you bring people together from diverse backgrounds.
Yeah.
Who have similar intentions. They want to give back. They want to help out. They want to be part of a community. What can come out of it? Like, I'll give you an example. I held the first event in Rio. A few months ago.
Wait, so Nomad's Giving Back? Yeah, okay. Right,
yeah. So just give me a little background in terms of the history of Nomad's Giving Back. It was a concept in my mind for a few months. And then I went on something called the Nomad Cruise, where I gave a talk to like 500 nomads.
Yeah.
And I was talking about my personal journey of what I've been trying to accomplish for my own life the last few years. And one of them, I said, actually, I'm just starting now the idea, the concept of nomads giving back. And it was pretty interesting because I found that sometimes you need to just put an idea out there and then see what happens and be willing to sort of like jump out of the helicopter and you make the parachute along the way.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, really gravitated towards the message, the concept, and from that, that's where it took off. And I helped sort of lead the fundraiser for that conference on that ship. And when I landed in Rio, this is just last December, 3 months ago, I have just hosted a local event, where I brought foreigners and locals together, and we had like a networking thing, and we featured a local school in the favela, just like the communa that you are helping out next
week.
Did
you have a connection with the school, or like know somebody who was in?
A friend of a friend.
Right, yeah.
Just trying to create that bridge, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's where some of the hard work comes in, right? Is building those relationships. So what's interesting is there was no real agenda other than trying to help them out.
Yeah.
It obviously did not make money. We did a little bit of a fundraiser, so some money went to the school. But two things happened that day. One is, one of my friends wanted to do something for Christmas and wanted to get some foreigners, nomads together and do something, but they had no idea where to start. But because we had local people there, and those who were connected to the communities that need the most help, we came up with a plan.
Yeah.
And a week later, we organized an event where we went into the favela, 20 nomads, and we donated more than $1,000 worth of gifts and toys and books and donations. And we ended up spending the day with 50 kids overlooking Copacabana Beach.
Really?
And had a beautiful celebration, bringing people together.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people walked away very inspired, I think, on both sides.
And
the thing is, that was not part of the goal, right? That just sort of happened. You know, you bring people together, that's where the magic happens. And another thing happened. A Japanese woman messaged us the next day and said, "I really admired what the school had to say. Thanks for inviting them to speak. I work for the Japanese embassy here in Rio, and we're looking for a social cause to donate money to and be a sponsor." And we're not talking about the $100 we raised by nomads.
Yeah.
An embassy from Japan is going to do a little more than $100, right? And so now they're in talks, and who knows what's going to happen with that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I love, is that if we can sort of connect, right? And inspire. Connect and inspire, I think, would be the two verbs, if you had to narrow it down that simply, of what I would love Nomads Giving Back to be. And I'm really optimistic in terms of the feedback I'm getting. I think, honestly, at this point, being so early on, like you asked about the business model or the legal structure.
That's a bit because we're talking about a similar thing and like looking into certain stuff. So we're a bit like, so that's more why I asked.
I'd love to chat more with you about that offline. And I think if we can figure out a model, whether it is nonprofit, for profit, a blend, but I think sustainability is the hardest part, and that's probably why there is a gap.
Yeah.
I don't think you and I are the first people to try to do this kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's. Oh, mate, that's unbelievable, that Brazil story. Like, that's what I love, like, even going to your first event that we went to. Like, we travelled overnight from Finlandia. I said, didn't I? Because I wanted to go to that. Obviously, we were involved in that, and I told Katja about it, so it's like I wanted to help her if she can meet people.
Yeah.
Which she did with you.
And she did, and that worked out in something else, right?
Like, exactly.
We helped bring people to her event because of you.
Yeah.
So, like, you... You and did the same thing.
Even I've introduced Katja to a few, like mostly Colombians. Like you said, that Colombians want to help out.
Yeah.
She's placed a few Colombians. Like generally speaking, they're like on the wealthier spectrum. But like in a way, that's who, a lot of the time, that is who the nomads or the travelers are meeting, because they're going to the more wealthy areas or staying in the safer, like more wealthy areas anyway.
It's a part of life.
It goes like that. But it's true, like just connecting like that, that's... It is to connect and to inspire. I feel like I understand it more just hearing that, to be honest, because it's so how long have you got in Colombia? Like, you're on a tourist visa?
I'm on a tourist visa, and so I'm doing the maximum 3 month stay right now.
Yeah.
So I'll be here for a little while.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to hop on the next Nomad Cruise and give a talk and try to spread the word. I'm going to host events in Spain and in Lisbon to sort of hopefully feature local social causes there.
Yeah.
And then my personal plan is to spend the next few months after that in Bali.
Right.
Bali is a really well-known place for nomads.
Yeah, it's fucking haven.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone. And then there's also a lot of social need and some really inspiring local causes that I would love to help support.
Over there?
Over
there. Have you been there before?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite places on the planet. They have really amazing people, locals, foreigners, a lot of need as well.
Yeah.
And I've had some experience with some local social causes there.
So Medellin is the first pilot. I did a little bit in Rio, but very briefly.
Yeah.
But Medellin is the real first project, and then Bali, I'm going to manage Bali and Medellin at the same time.
Yeah.
And those are going to be my two sort of pilot cities, towns, to figure out what works and what the need is. And, you know, a big part of this is talking to people like you, to Kata, to the Peace Hub, to organizations and leaders. We're connected with the Impact Hub here. And I think I don't want to fall for one of those common mistakes of being a foreigner that kind of goes somewhere and thinks they could figure it out. Yeah. And, you know, it's about...
And save the world.
Exactly. Exactly. No, I mean, intentions are good, but we need to be realistic of what actually works.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's curating partnerships like you did with Catalina.
Yeah.
Someone who is on the ground who knows it. And that's why I brought on Colombians on my team. And they have been a tremendous support in understanding the local environment and the local needs. And this is where the core competencies and the capabilities are being built. It's the relationships. It's the local know-how. It's the connections. And then I'm really hoping that these two pilots over the next 6 to 12 months could be... we could build a proven model and then hopefully scale it globally is my dream.
Yeah. Well, so who's on your team?
Manu. We have Manu.
And the social media guy.
The social media guy you're referring to is Martin.
Martin, sorry.
And we have Maria.
Maria. Yeah. I don't know Maria, I don't think.
Yeah, so Maria, they're all three of them are great. And we have two other new employees who are part-time who are helping us out as well. Camila and Esteban. And it's been an amazing experience. Just last night we went to... Have you ever heard of escape rooms?
Yeah. I've done that, yeah.
So we had a team outing last night in Envigado and did an escape room. And it was hilarious. It was so much fun. And it was... we were going to go bowling. And I thought to myself... No. I thought about all... No, there's nothing wrong with bowling. I love bowling. But I thought about all my corporate experiences where we do bowling and everyone's doing their own thing. But escape room, we really had to service a team. It was high pressure. There was 1 hour. There was a time clock, and it was a mystery. And
do you get everyone, a clue?
We got a clue, and everyone played a role. And it was actually the perfect team experience.
Yeah.
So
they're big. They're in the U.S. they're big as well.
For me, it was my first time ever.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend it. It's a cool experience.
So what did you do corporate? You mentioned before you'd done the corporate thing in New York. But
yeah.
So what were you doing?
Most of my corporate background was New York. I did a year in London and a few other places. I did a few different things. I worked in early in my career, I did operations leadership, working for either healthcare organizations or investment banks. And then I moved more into a business development role over the years, and account management. So I had a pretty diverse business background.
Yeah.
Did
you go to university?
Yeah, I also went to university, undergrad, and I did graduate MBA.
Oh, right. So where did you go?
Undergrad, I was at Georgetown in D.C.
Oh, yeah, I know Georgetown.
You know it?
I know D.C.
Yeah. Nice. And then my MBA was in New York at NYU, New York University.
I know that as well.
Yeah.
Oh, so did you... So then did you go into the corporate thing because that was the done thing, generally speaking?
It was, looking back, it was just what you do.
Yeah.
I mean, it was either doctor, lawyer, MBA, maybe engineer. Those were what was in my...
But what do you mean? Was that because of your background? Didn't you say your dad's Egyptian?
My dad's Egyptian, yeah. So my dad and mom came to the U.S., a year before I was born.
Right.
So I was born in Philadelphia, city of brotherly love.
Were they the lower class immigrant story? Were they a doctor and a lawyer? So then it was expected of you to be one, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's hard to put them in a bucket. My dad was a doctor. He's been retired for quite a while now. So, but he came from a village outside Cairo.
Yeah.
And I'd say, if I had to guess, I'd say
a respectable family in the middle class, but it was still a village in Cairo. Compare that to like New York City or London is a little bit of a you know, a leap. My mom was the best mom on the planet. Didn't have a professional profession, but if there was one, then she'd get the MVP for best mom. And and I guess when I was saying those were the options, I think I was just saying, like, we, you know, they had high expectations for us, and in the U.S., or I guess globally, there's those traditional fields.
I, like, it's the same. Like, I know what you mean. But, like, I was, because a lot, of, an immigrant can often, like, if your dad wasn't a doctor, say, and he came over, worked his ass off to just get you to university or something, then there's also that expectation that you do something like professional, like professional qualification, doctor, lawyer or something as well, even though he hasn't come from that. But then there's the one, if your parents are, then they have an expectation to, I don't know, probably keeping up with the Joneses then, because their social circles with doctors and your mother, your school and your parent.
And it's, you know, it's the American dream. It's like, there's, you're looking for freedom. And you get freedom through, you know, and education, and so it was all that. But I mean, I did it very happily. It just I don't know how conscious everything was. I felt like maybe looking back, I was in a passenger seat of the car,
major key.
And I don't think I jumped into the driver's seat until 5 years ago, well into my 30s. And I don't regret any decision I've made. I think that everyone is a culmination of their life experiences, what you, ideally you look back at least the majority of your experiences and say, you know, that happened for a reason. And for example, like, I was able to save up quite a bit of money, more than I needed, and that gave me freedom to actually have more, to hop in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not that everyone always can just do whatever they want. You have to sort of sometimes pay your dues. Yeah, you have to be something. I mean, there's a real world, right?
Yeah.
So I did my real world thing, and I think I paid some dues. And then I caught up in terms of figuring out later on in life what was really important to me.
Yeah.
And then I guess my priorities have sort of shifted.
Yeah. So when, like, how have you got friendly with all the nomads? Are they your corporate friends who have now saved up enough money just living, or did you go work somewhere where you could travel the world, or what did you do?
That's a good question, but it's funny that you said that, because I don't think any of my corporate friends have ever done this.
that's actually another question of most of, like, when we talk to people, we always ask, like, what? And my last podcast episode that I published is a 55-year-old guy from Miami. And he said when he was like 22 after college, like, he worked three jobs and went off. Then, and he said, I didn't get a job till I was 25. All of his friends went and got a job, and we were like, did they ever, like, quit? Or like, did they ever sort of, like, you sort of say, like, get more conscious and think, oh, no, my priorities changed. He was like, did they fuck? He's like, no way, they're all still working now. And of course, when a wife and kids comes along or something like that, then it's like, you have to work because you've got the mortgage, you've got the kids to pay for, and the rest that goes with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, like, I need to, like, make it clear that, you know, to each his own. Like, I don't think there's any sort of right path. I just am thankful that for me, I feel like I have found a closer, more aligned path for me. And to answer your question, I sort of fell into the nomad community because what I did was I was doing the hardcore working around the clock suit and tie thing for many years. And then I found myself on my vacation time gravitating towards volunteer work. So I would do a volunteer work in, like, Zambia or China or Sri Lanka. And then at one point I said, you know what? Why am I feeling most alive when I come back? And then when I get back to work in the office, I don't.
Yeah, it drains you again.
It drains me. And so I felt more connected to... my life had more meaning, and I felt more connected to both the foreigners and the locals, like, just like-minded people. And then at one point a few years ago, I took a leap of faith and just left my corporate life behind. Then
did everyone tell you not to?
I would say most people either directly or hinted at that I lost my mind.
What are you doing, man?
Yeah.
What did your parents say?
So the good news is that, like, at that point I was well into my 30s, and so even though I care a lot about what they think, I was at a point where I, you know, I'm my own man.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
So I made the decision and then told them. Because parents are very influential. They know how to work you. So I, and you know what, to be honest with you, they've been very, very supportive all along. You know, every once in a while they'll raise an eyebrow. And they're it's more about fear of me not, like, what am I doing? Because I went off and did some adventures, like, in bizarre places that they had to look up on the map, you know, that kind of thing. So, and my mom's biggest fear is, like, don't ever bungee jump again, you know? Yeah. Like, she didn't care that I volunteered in Kenyan slums for 4 months, but she cared about bungee jumping. So it's kind of funny what people consider fearful. But, you know...
But you left, and then, so you saved up enough to leave and, like, live and travel, adventure and stuff like that.
Exactly. And then I found myself loving the sort of backpacking, lose yourself thing for a little while, but then I realized that I was craving community, and craving more than that first conversation 100 times.
Tariq,
I'm from blah 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 and I do blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But I was craving that 100th conversation with one person.
What's up?
Yeah. And so then I stumbled upon these nomad places like Bali, Chiang Mai, a few other places, like Budapest, for example. And then I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Like, people actually do live abroad for a long time.
Yeah.
And they're also exploring the world. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's some benefit of getting a taste of a place for a few days. But to really get to know a place, you need a few months and ideally a few years.
Yeah.
But, you know, we only have one life.
Yeah.
So I've always sort of struggled in finding that balance between depth versus breadth.
Yeah.
And I'm at a point now where I feel like I've been to the buffet and I tried everything, everything I really want to, and now I'm going back for seconds and thirds to what I love.
Yeah.
And Medellin and Bali are two of my places where I'm going for thirds and fourths and fifths.
Yeah. We were talking about this last night, how, like, we were saying how people's mindsets change when they travel. So, for example, if you see someone who's been on, like, a year trip or something like that, is often you can tell maybe they're more open-minded, like, call it what you like, but they've grown over that year and changed, probably. You've probably done something wrong if you haven't changed, if you've gone back. But I was saying that if you had... We were saying that, like, when you figure out that you need to live on a budget or, like, and you meet people from different areas, all of this stuff, is often the backpacking thing. Is like going out on the piss, or having a few beers, drugs or girls, whatever you want to call it. It's really, I was saying that a lot of people are unconsciously traveling as well. They don't know that. They're saying, oh, I'm going traveling because they saved up money and doing all of that. But really, they're not, like, acknowledging where that guy is from, or, like, their actual journey, or, like, their own growth. When they go home, that's when they realise that they've grown and they look at things a bit different. But I think you should do it along the way a bit more. Do you know what I mean? Because then you're sort of, you put yourself in a situation whilst you're still away to, like, grow more and stuff.
And when did you figure that out? How did this become your insight? Because I think that's the question, is that a lot of people don't get to that till later, and you seem to figure that out early on.
Yeah, well, I love personal growth. I'm addicted to, so that's why I do things. And so, like, I always said I wanted to go traveling, but now I say I'm living. Like, people say, when's your trip ending? I'm like, well, like, when I die. Like that sort of mentality. So, but because I feel like I've grown so much by doing certain things. But if I go home, I would do things as well and grow. If I was back in London as well, like, and I would be happy. Stuff like that. Do you know what I mean?
Where absolutely.
Some people feel like it's their escape. And then, I mean, I'm still figuring out as well. So it's not... Like, that's why I like conversations with people. I mean, you're a bit older than me as well. You could probably say, yeah, well, I found like that when it was this or that, or...
And, yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on. I think... So I also am passionate about personal growth, but I'll be honest with you, I don't think that was my priority in my 20s. I think my priority in my 20s was professional growth.
Yeah, I think that's... That sounds scandalous. I can't...
Listen, I mean, everyone has their own personal journey, and And again, there is no right or wrong.
Yeah, that's but, what I don't think that would sound scandalous to a lot of other people, especially like where my peers at home wouldn't think that as well. Like,
but. Well, and the thing is, like, everyone, no one has ever walked in your shoes or vice versa. Yeah. And I think what I've realized is that I want to create the experiences that I feel will challenge me, will make me grow outside my comfort zone, but not across my danger zone. And I think that's where the growth happens. And I think it's through being open and humble enough to realize that no one has figured it out. Yeah. That there is no answer.
Yeah, there's no answer.
But maybe deep within each person, there's a compass. And could you follow your true north? You know, and I think that's the hardest part, is really deep down understanding your true self and knowing that you're going after what you think is most important. And I'll tell you what, I think what I still struggle with all the time is how to balance priorities, how to balance my values, my goals, what I want out of life, and every single thing, every single hour, every single dollar, every single thought is a trade-off for something else.
Yeah.
And how do we optimize? And what is optimizing? What is your optimize of your time and your value?
And well, this is a good thing. Well, I think because there is no answer. Like I look at it like a game. Like, and it's all the same game. Like Nomad's Giving Back, you said, is a work in progress. Like yourself is a work in progress.
Exactly.
Like if you, like when you, everything is just, you just have to enjoy the journey there. Like, and then, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Like a lot of people, so that's what I think what you were saying, that, like, so people aren't aware of that. You need to be aware of, like, it doesn't have to call it a game, call it the journey, the process or whatever, but it's so interrelatable. It's like if you're trying to get with a girl, like it's a game. Like if it just happened, it wouldn't be as good. Like no, but it's true. If Nomad's Giving Back was just made, it wouldn't be as good.
Then
as you working there
what
to,
was
make,
the point? Yeah, yeah.
To make it.
Yeah, you gotta earn. You gotta grow. It's like on Sunday I'm running a half marathon, which means I had to go to the gym today. I was not in the mood to go to the gym today, but if I don't go to the gym today, then I'm not going to be able to.
Yeah.
So like it's the journey, it's the process, it's the same words you used and everything you do. And if it wasn't that easy, if you were just sort of gifted something entirely, then I think you're absolutely right. Then it kind of loses its value a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. 100%. Yeah. Well,
so that's part one of the convo I had with Tarek. I hope you understand why I get so much inspiration from this lad. He's on an amazing journey. I hope somebody is listening, or somebody listening can help Nomads Giving Back, or maybe know somebody who might be able to help or work together or collab, or like Tarek said, build the bridge between maybe a social enterprise and Tarek, or a non-profit, or whatever it is, anywhere in the world as well. So that's brilliant. Remember, keep an eye out for part two next week. Hope you stay tuned to the podcast, and I hope you can share this with somebody who you might think gets a bit of value from it. And don't forget to check out Nomads Giving Back as well. See you in part two.